The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. The need for independent media is more critical than ever as people search for the truth. For the past 20 years, the Power Hour has focused on subjects which inform and educate about the real challenges we face as a nation. Join us as we discuss the Constitution, current events, and natural health solutions with the best experts on radio. Learn from some of the most insightful commentators you'll find in talk radio.
My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I'm the guest host today on this show, the Power Hour, on bbsradio.com/thepowerhour if you want to check out the archive later. And I have been in radio, as I was telling my engineer earlier off mic. I've been in AM radio since 2011. I host two programs in Southern California, Constitution Radio on KMET, 1490 AM in the Riverside market. And you can look that up at KMET1490AM.com. And I am also on two stations in the San Diego market with a show called the Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs. That's on KPRZ and KCBQ, The Answer San Diego, KPRZ being K-Praise down in San Diego, on Saturday night, KCBQ at 8 p.m. Pacific and K-Praise at 9 p.m. Pacific. And you can just go to douglasvgibbs.com, my website, douglasvgibbs.com, and check out all that I do. And as for those radio shows in San Diego, they are also on all of the podcast networks. So if you want to check out what I do with that program by podcast, go to your favorite podcast, iHeart or Apple or Odyssey or Spotify. I'm on pretty much all of them. And you just look up in the search bar, Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs, and you should be able to find all of my past shows there. All right, welcome to the program. I'm excited to spend time with you, this audience. Like I said, I've been on the Power Hour before, but it's usually as a co-host. This is going to be the first time I'm the host, and I'm very happy about it. And I got to thinking about, what do we want to talk about? Now, the Power Hour is known for talking about topics that are important, educational topics, and the Constitution. I remember way back when Joyce was, you know, that the Constitution was even back then a part of all of what this show was about. And so as Mr. Constitution, that's my nickname online, I thought it, you know, of course I'd talk about the Constitution, but I didn't want to be some lesson where I'm just going through the Constitution. So I got to thinking, what would the Founding Fathers think if they had a portal window view of today's world? They were able to look through time at this day here in America, what's going on at this moment. What would the Founding Fathers think? How would they react? You know, as a friend of mine years ago wrote a book about what would the Founding Fathers think. It's kind of what inspired me for today's program. And on the cover of the image, the three Founding Fathers that are in the book, the image in the front, they're all looking through this window and their jaws are just dropped all the way to the ground because they're so shocked at what they see. Are we even close to what they designed? And what did they think about the kind of society we have today? And, you know, let me begin with that, matter of fact. We'll start with what they thought about people being piled up in cities and the rural areas. Because, see, our system was designed to be a republic, not a democracy. I know we use the word democracy all the time. We see it with our favorite pundits out there, right? And we got a, you know, we got Democracy 2024 coming up, and then we hear particular people of particular parties saying, "Well, we got to save our democracy," or "That person's a threat to our democracy." And my joke has been, "Well, I hope that Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy because we're not supposed to be a democracy; we're supposed to be a republic, and it was designed to be a republic." Now, those mechanisms of republicanism or a republican form of government have been largely either maligned or swept away. What few mechanisms still exist, which remain, like the Electoral College, are under attack. Because, see, they understand, and when I say they, I mean the enemies of the Constitution. I'm not going to use parties and ideologies and left, right, up, down, red, blue, whatever, because when it comes to the machine, they all feed from the same trough. But really, who concerns me are those who are enemies of the Constitution. And they know that democracy moves systems from where they are to where they're going. In other words, democracy is a transitional form of government. Republics or any other type of system, once they become a democracy, they are transforming into an oligarchy where a powerful few rule over the many. And, matter of fact, while you can't find an exact quote of this being attributed to Karl Marx, this is essentially what he said in his writings. Karl Marx, being the father of communism, wasn't a new idea. He was just rehashing something it goes all the way back to, the serpent in the garden. He said basically through his writings that democracy is the road to socialism. And so democracy, what democracy is, it is the voice of the population. Mob rule, majority rule. Now, majority's fine, and democracy to a point is fine. The founding fathers believe that democracy should be an important part of our system because the House of Representatives from day one were democratically voted in by people based on population in districts that are based on their size, based on population, all that. So democracy, democratic processes were to be included in our Republican form of government. But we're not to be a pure democracy where everything is democratic. If we were a pure democracy, amendments to the Constitution would just be voted on. The judges wouldn't be appointed and confirmed by Senate. They would just be voted in. The president would be just directly voted in, national popular vote, minus that electoral college. But the founding fathers understood that that can be dangerous. It comes down to a distribution of power. The Constitution, its purpose was to properly distribute power in a manner where nothing had complete power. In other words, you don't want the president to have too much power. You don't want Congress to have too much power, or the judges, or the states, or the federal government. But you also don't want the people to have too much power. If you put too much power in one place, it becomes dangerous. Even we, as voters, mess it up if we have all the power. So democracy is only a part of the republic. President wasn't voted in by a democratic vote. We have an electoral college, and even the electoral college has transformed a little bit over time. It was designed to be slightly different. The people didn't vote for the president at all. They voted for their electors, and their electors voted for president. It wasn't a winner take all from the states. It was, whatever the elector voted for, that's where the electoral vote went. So, for example, in California, which has 54 electoral votes, and all of them go, whoever wins the state, all of them go to that candidate. It would be, actually very possible for those votes to go in all different directions. Wherever that electoral vote voted, that's where it would go. There are two states today who still splits up their electoral votes, Nebraska and Maine. So anyway, so I think the first thing that the founding fathers will be shocked by is that democracy has so grabbed the reins in our system. Now, as I go through this, as I discuss this program with what my topic, I guess, with you, if you want to participate, I'll be happy to take callers. I'd like to get at least through maybe the first quarter to a third of the show before we really start getting into those questions. I want to lay down some groundwork here. But I want you to write this down. If you want to call in, excuse me, call in and be on the air with Mr. Constitution, Douglas V. Gibbs, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471, if you want to call in. And once again, I mean, I'll take callers now if you want, but I'd rather, let's get some groundwork done. And then about 15 minutes or so, 15 or 20 minutes. If you want to call in, you got a question, you got this burning thing, you got a Constitution question, especially, or what I'm talking about, I'd be more than happy to accept your call and let's have a conversation. Now, here's the thing, and then I get back to what I was saying earlier about democracy. So, democracy really the population centers where the majority is, that's going to rule the day when you have a pure democracy. So in other words, democracy, as Jefferson put it, is the tyranny of the majority, where 51% can vote away the rights of the other 49%. And that 51% or higher tended to live in the cities. These are the population centers. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think everybody in a large city is problematic. I don't think every single city is problematic, but for the most part, cities tend to be. And Thomas Jefferson, one of my favorite founding fathers, was not fond of large cities. He believed that tyranny rose from large centralized population centers. James Madison shared that sentiment in Federalist Paper number 10, referring to large impetuous mobs as factions, quote, united and actuated by some common impulse of passion or of interest adverse to the rights of other citizens or to the permanent and aggregate interest of the community. And this is where he believed democracy became dangerous. Jefferson was clearer in his writings regarding the dangers of people piled upon each other in the large cities. And his quote, "When we get piled upon one another in large cities, as in Europe, we shall become as corrupt as Europe." Now, see, when they were making this system, creating the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Association, the Articles of Confederation, and the U.S. Constitution, the four founding documents, the aim was to become as unlike Europe as possible and to separate from Europe, to untie those binds, to cut those lines that connected us to Europe. This is not to say that they were to ignore Europe. The European countries were our greatest trading partners. The founding fathers understood that this new fledgling republic was existing in a world full of empires. And so they had to be strong enough to handle this life, this world of empires. And they need to stay connected because of trading partners and things like that. But the same token, they didn't want to be anything like the old world. The idea was to be as unlike the old world as possible. And what they saw in the cities of Europe, these large populations tended to require more regulations, more government influence on the lives of the people. Thomas Jefferson said, "My reading of history convinces me that most bad government results from too much government." And that's what would go on in the cities. When you got people piled up on each other, you got a sign for everything, and governments. It's funny because Alexis de Tocqueville visited the United States in the 1830s. And one of the things that he noticed, he was from France. And one of the things he noticed was that the people operated without a lot of government influence. He thought that was strange, but he came to realize that was a good thing. The United States of America was founded on principles designed to protect liberty, to secure the rights of the citizens, and state sovereignty against a potentially tyrannical federal government that was being created by the Constitution for the purpose of protecting, preserving, and promoting the union of states. The old world mocked the attempt. It was this experiment that was not going to succeed. They were just waiting for America to fail. And then they'd come in and pick up the pieces and grab what they could. So they mocked it, determining that self-governance without a ruling elite, those elitists who, they know better than and they know how to, take care of things for the greater good. You've heard it, right? You hear it today, right? And Europe decided that self-governance without that ruling elite to ensure the common good was folly. The new country put its trust in a system rejected by Europe called republicanism. Americans determined that as a republic, freedom would be best protected. Now, some feared that if the population became too great, that the United States population grew to a size that was beyond what a republic could handle, that and if too many cities were built, well, that republic would might descend into a democracy, which always becomes an oligarchy, the many ruled over by a powerful few. How could a system where local issues were supposed to be navigated by local government without the watchful eye of a centralized system filled with bureaucrats be anything other than utter failure when the bureaucracy is filled with persons who only care most about the interests of the cities? How could a system like that survive? Do you really want these representatives also that are all about the cities, say, telling a farmer how to farm? And so now this goes back to our question at the beginning of the program. What would the founding fathers think about what they're seeing? They would see all this democracy. They would see this bureaucracy. They'd see the deep state and all of that. And like that image I told you about at the beginning of the program on the front of that book where their jaws hitting the ground, I think that's what it would be. But at the same time, they recognized that was the possibility. That's why they wrote the Constitution the way they did. A limited government. A government that only had expressly enumerated powers in the Constitution. If the power is not listed in the Constitution, government doesn't have the power. That's supported, by the way, by the 10th Amendment. 10th Amendment says that the power is not delegated to the United States. In other words, not listed in the Constitution, nor prohibited to the states, or reserved to the states or to the people. So we have a federal government that's unlike, see, and that cracks me up because, see, what we hear is national government. The idea was not to create a national government. National government is a full umbrella where the government has all power over all things. What they say goes. That's the way it is. A federal government in a republic like ours has limited powers. They don't have say over everything. In Federalist Paper number 45, James Madison explains that the powers given to the federal government are few and defined. But what's given to the states is numerous and indefinite. That the powers that are given to the federal government, the United States government, the general government, the federal government, those are for external issues and issues that concern the union, like disputes between the states, maybe your postal service, things like that, that have to do with the union. But the things that concern the citizens with their lives, their liberties, their property, and the internal improvement and the internal prosperity of the state, those powers remained with the states. None of the federal government's business. The states handle their own affairs when it comes to that stuff. Well, gosh, Doug, well, then you'll have states doing all kinds of things. It'll be make them differ from each other. And right. That's the point. The states, like you and I, are supposed to be unique individuals that do things their way. Each state, after all, has its own culture, does it not? We even have our own languages. And if you don't believe me, try speaking whatever language you speak in your state in Boston. Oh, I know it's all English, right? But English in California, Minnesota, the South, and Boston and New York are all very different languages from each other, are they not? Because each culture, each region, and each state are unique. They should be. That was the idea. And then they serve as like laboratories in this system where a state tries something. The other states are watching and say, well, let's see what happens when such and such state does that. Wow, that was a crash and burn. We're not doing that. Or wow, that works and that succeeded. Maybe we can make it better. Maybe we don't like what's going on there. And then the states adjust themselves. It's almost like a free market system where innovation emerges out of competition. After all, the states are competing for population, for taxpayers. Some of them, not so much. They don't want a lot of people. Just ask Wyoming. So this is this is the nature of our republic. This is what the founders and, you know, Thomas Jefferson actually hoped that America would remain an agrarian society, a country full of small farms, small family farms. His distaste for cities was well known. He called them pestilential to the morals, the health, and the liberties of man. And he called them not only that, but this goes back to his studies of Latin and Greek. And Jefferson, amazing individual, it was said that he could write in Latin with one hand and Greek the other. But anyway, so Jefferson derived his belief from all of this, all of his research and all of that he knew, that the ideal citizen was one who was a modest family farmer who produced everything he needed, making him truly free. His relations to the surrounding populations would then be voluntary rather than necessary. He wouldn't be dependent upon anybody or any system. City dwellers could not grow their own food, cut their down trees and build their own homes, nor create their own clothing or products for market, so they were less free. They were dependent. Maybe not necessarily always dependent on government, but they were dependent on something for the food. They were dependent on the grocery store, for example. So according to Jefferson, they were shackled with economic and political dependency. Quote, this is Thomas Jefferson, when he wrote one time, "Those who labor in the earth are the chosen people of God. The mobs of great cities," he wrote, "add just so much to the support of pure government as sores do to the strength of the human body. It is the manners and spirit of the people which preserve a republic in vigor. A degeneracy in these is a canker which soon eats to the heart of its laws and constitution." Now, at the time, Philadelphia was already considered a metropolitan center, a hub of societal organization, with its more than 50,000 residents. 50,000, that was a big city. I know in Southern California, I used to live in the Temecula Valley. Temecula is like 108,000, Murrieta, 113,000, and Menifee, like 90,000. And then I think Wildomar is like 75,000. So, I mean, you've got, you know, 250,000 people right there in those four little towns. And that area is considered a rural area compared to Los Angeles and San Diego, kind of out there in the middle of nowhere, good hour and a half north of San Diego. And if there was no traffic, maybe an hour and a half southeast of Los Angeles. Of course, with the traffic, is about 2.5-3 hours. But so back then, 50,000 residents, that was a metropolitan city. That was Philadelphia. And the majority of the remainder of America, though, was nothing like Philadelphia. 95% of Americans were farmers. And when we get back to the Power Hour, I'm going to continue on this discussion. And don't forget, your calls are welcome. 888-429-5471. We'll be right back.
Empower your day by tuning in to the Power Hour live from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central Time for dynamic discussions and electrifying energy. Got a burning question or a hot take? Call in at 888-429-5471 and be part of the conversation. Can't catch us live? No sweat. Replay the show anytime, anywhere by visiting thepowerhour.com. Want to stay ahead of the curve? Sign up for our daily newsletter and get exclusive show archives and guest info straight to your inbox. Prefer podcasts? We've got you covered on all major platforms and devices. So whether you're tuning in live or catching up on your commute, Power Hour is always within reach. Don't miss out. Join our community and make every hour a Power Hour, because your day deserves a boost.
Power your life with the best health, wellness, and readiness products from thepowermall.com. Each purchase you make doesn't just benefit you, it also supports independent news media. That's right. You're backing the good guys who bring you the truth. Feel good knowing that every dollar you spend helps small businesses grow. Imagine a community where your health is optimized and your mind is well informed. That's the future you're building with the Power Hour and the Power Mall. So, take the step today. Empower your wellness and support independent media. Shop smart. Shop independent. Shop thepowermall.com. Together, we make a difference.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean black seed oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good it supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on black seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
If your wellness routine needs a boost, you're in for a treat. meet vitamin B17. Did you know that vitamin B17, also known as amygdalin, is a natural compound found in plant-based sources like bitter apricot seeds? It's time to explore how this powerful nutrient can support your overall well-being. Our vitamin B17 capsules and bitter apricot seeds are made with the highest quality standards, ensuring each product is pure, potent, and packed with benefits. Imagine starting your day with a boost of natural goodness. Vitamin B17 is known for its potential health benefits, from supporting your immune system to promoting general wellness. And for those who prefer a convenient option, our extra potent B17 500 milligrams capsules are here to help you on your journey to better health. Why choose Richardson Nutritional Center? Because we believe in providing you with the very best. Our products are meticulously processed to maintain their natural integrity and efficacy. Your health and satisfaction are our top priority. So what are you waiting for? Embark on a natural journey to wellness today. Head over to thepowermall.com or give us a call at 877-817-9829 to place your order. Discover the health benefits of vitamin B17 and take a step towards a healthier, happier you with Richardson Nutritional Center. Act now and feel the difference.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour.
Welcome back, Patriots. My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I am your host today, Mr. Constitution, on the Power Hour. So if anybody should be talking about the Constitution, so I will get into a little bit about the Constitution. Matter of fact, I also want to encourage you, if you have any questions, comments, want to discuss something I said, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. So I was talking about Thomas Jefferson and his dislike for cities, his belief that we really should be an agrarian society. That was true freedom. 95% of Americans at the time were farmers, as I said right before the break. And now there were cities, you know, Philadelphia, 50,000 people, but the vast majority of the American people lived either on farms or were scattered along the coast of fishing villages or things like that. To Jefferson, cities were unhealthy places, both for the body and the mind. Without open spaces, he argued, people were confined and destined to be dependent upon the government or upon other things. So once again, you know, you can't grow your own food. You're dependent upon, if not the government, for certain things regarding your food, such as food stamps or whatever today, a grocery store or things like that, a market. Now, that's not to say there weren't markets out in the country, but people, it was a more free market system. It was a more, I'm going to take care of myself. Self-determination, all of that jazz. And so, but as the country grew, urban life was inevitable. As the American population grew rapidly, cities began to dot the landscape across the map. And that's the reality of growth in any society. But despite his anti-urban bias, you read the writings of Jefferson, sometimes he seems to be a man of paradox. He called his five-year residency in Paris from 1784 to 1789 a time of thriving, and he regarded his years in Philadelphia as the most satisfying of his life. Now, when we get back to the Constitution, once again, feel free to call in, 888-429-5471. I encourage you. I love to talk to folks. You're not interrupting. Call in, 888-429-5471. I am all ears and answers, hopefully, for you if you call in, 888-429-5471. But what I was talking about earlier about the limited government, how the federal government had only the powers Listen, this is called the enumeration doctrine. Enumeration meaning listed or enumerated, numbered, and in listed. So the enumeration doctrine says that the federal government only has an authority if it is listed in the Constitution. This is where Dobbs v. Jackson in 2021 was kind of drawing from. This is the case, if you remember, that invalidated Roe v. Wade and sent abortion back to the states. According to the United States Supreme Court, and rightly so, Roe v. Wade was an unconstitutional ruling, and that the federal government, the federal courts, should have never even taken the case. It is up to each state what they do, because there's no, in the Constitution, getting back to our enumeration doctrine, there is no listing of abortion or any medical procedure or health services, any of that, in the Constitution as a power to the federal government. And I'll be honest with you, we hear this all the time. Those who are enemies of the Constitution, they say, well, yeah, but your health care is a right, and the federal government has to, you know, guarantee and protect that right. That's not how rights work. The government's job when it comes to rights is hands off, not to guarantee and protect. They can't even guarantee that they can, you know, take care of a budget, and they're going to guarantee you your rights. Protecting your rights, they're the greatest threat to your rights. If they're the greatest threat to your rights, why would you want them protecting your rights? So that's part of the problem right there, right? So you go back to the Declaration of Independence, really, when it comes to our rights, right? What does it say? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's kind of the way your rights operate. You don't have a right to be happy. You have a right to pursue it. So you don't have a right to health care for it to be guaranteed and protected. You have a right to pursue it. How do you pursue your health care? You go to the free market. You compare prices. You decide for yourself what's going to be best for you, what you can afford, and so on and so forth. What's government's job? To get out of the way and let it happen. You have a right to pursue your rights. Government's job is to restrain itself and others from interfering with your rights. Now, if your right is interfered with, then it comes down to, well, was this a clash of rights? Or is this another right being practiced? Rights cannot hit each other, run into each other. It's like you have a right to go through the intersection there on your street. And there's a stoplight there, though, so that everybody knows the rules, that you can navigate that intersection without running into each other. So the government getting involved with the stoplight doesn't take away your right, but it does help that right be carried out in an orderly fashion. Otherwise, government's business, and once they put up that little thing that we all agreed upon, that stoplight or stop sign or whatever it may be, then they get out of the way. And the only time they get involved is when the laws are violated or we run into each other because somebody wasn't paying attention. And, you know, my right to go through that intersection stops at the edge of somebody else's bumper. So as long as we're doing our rights without colliding and all that and breaking the rules, it's none of government's business. Second, we hit each other, suddenly government has to get involved. So the law enforcement officer, your police or sheriff or whoever it is, shows up and they take a report. And then from that report, it's determined and, you know, it goes from there. You know, and it's funny. That's what I say about the police and the law enforcement in our country. You know, you ever notice on the police cars, they used to say this all the time. I don't know how much it does anymore, but to protect and serve. Well, they're not there to protect and serve. They're there to take a report after it happens. Now, yeah, there is a certain protection of service. Don't get me wrong. But really, their main job is because you're innocent, proven guilty. And if there's no crime committed, it's none of their business, right? They don't show up till after whatever happened. We don't live in the minority report where they can prevent crime. That would be, well, anti-liberty. But anyway, get back to my point here. So this enumeration doctrine means that government it only has the powers given to it. And when it comes to our rights, we're there to pursue our rights and there to stay out of the way unless there's a problem. I'll give you another example. Let me do this. So life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. So you don't have a right to be happy. You have a right to pursue being happy. You don't have a right to your health care. You have a right to pursue it. They'll tell you have a right to education. You don't have a right to education. You have a right to pursue it. It's your job to decide how much education you want, what you can afford, so on and so forth, where you want to go. Government now has, they've guaranteed everybody gets an education. Well, now we have so many bachelor's degrees out there that it's sort of like the dollar. They're losing their value because there's more bachelor's degrees than jobs out there needing bachelor's degrees. So they've actually messed it all up by interfering and making sure everybody got a degree and everybody goes to college. Not for everybody to go to college. Some people don't. Some people pursue things in a different way. Trade schools, just working real hard, self-taught on certain things. I was, when I was in high school, I was considered one of the people that was expected to go to college. But for some reason, I thought marrying my high school girlfriend, getting her pregnant, and enlisting in the Navy was a much better idea. Don't get me wrong, it was a wonderful idea. 40 years later, 40 years later, she and I are still married. 2 kids, 7 grandkids. I did go back to school for a while when I was working in the construction industry. Went to night school. I think I got 32 units. Never got my degree. My wife went back to school. She did get her degree. She has a bachelor's. I helped her out. I actually helped her with her homework and writing papers, stuff. I'm a writer. I have 10 books, matter of fact. So if you want to purchase any of my books, just get up on Amazon and look up books by Douglas V. Gibbs. My store at my website is not complete, but it should be soon. But that is something we pursue. You don't have a right to education. You have a right to pursue it. How about this one? You don't have the right to have a cake baked exactly the way you want, but you have a right to pursue it. So if you want a cake baked with a couple of guys on the top with a wedding fringe, and so you go out there to pursue that right, and the Christian baker says, well, we don't offer that product. The answer is not to sue the baker for not making your cake. They don't offer the product. They have a right to offer the products that they desire to offer. And as Christians, they don't want to offer that product. This is not to say that you shouldn't get your cake. Somebody out there is going to bake it. You don't have a right to have that cake baked the way you want. You have a right to pursue it. So pursue it with the next baker and then the next baker till you find it. But see, this is what tyranny does. And this is what people do when they think they're in a democracy. Well, yeah, but the majority says you should make that cake. It doesn't matter what the majority thinks, because what's important is not the majority. What's important is something called the rule of law. And that's what the Constitution is all about, the rule of law. Our representatives are not lawmakers, although we call them that. They're representatives. And while they do represent us, they also represent the rule of law. The rule of law is the natural order of things, right and wrong, the moral standard, God's law, the rule of law. So if we live in a pure democracy and majority rules and whatever the majority says happens, and let's say the majority decides to vote that everybody with green eyes needs to be arrested and face the death penalty for having green eyes, the rule of law says that's wrong. And so our representative's job is not to do what the constituency says, but to say, whoa, wait, rule of law says that's wrong. We're not going to do it. I don't care what the population thinks. I don't care if they will democratically vote me out. The rule of law is what is at the top here in a republic. Democracy, demos kratos, Greek, for rule of the people, and res publica, Latin for the thing and the the public thing or the law, rule of law. That's the basis of those two words. So democracy on purpose was avoided. Democracy on purpose is not what this country is about. It's not what it was designed to be. I don't want to preserve my democracy. I don't want to save the democracy. I want to restore the republic. The republic, restore the republic. That's more important to me. You want to preserve the democracy in this election? If you're trying to save democracy, then you're part of the problem. You're part of the tyranny that knows that democracy is the road to ruin. Democracy is the road to socialism. Democracy is the road to dictatorship. Of course, the enemies of the Constitution out there saying that the folks that I might prefer as a candidate, like Donald J. Trump, well, he's the problem. He's the authoritarian. He's the fascist. How? They still have, well, he said he's going to be a dictator on day one. It was a tongue-in-cheek, you dummies. In other words, he's going to make sure what he wants is going to get done on day one. When it comes to immigration and getting, you know, his executive orders and all that. That's what he meant. He was being facetious on purpose because he knew they would grab that and go nuts with it. So one of the things that appeals to me about Donald J. Trump is his way of getting them to react. So once again, 888-429-5471. So as a democracy, we are in trouble. As a republic, be on the road back to what we originally were intended to be. And that's what the Constitution was all about, making this country a republic, a federal republic, not just any republic. There's a lot of countries that call themselves republics. People's Republic of China, right? The French Republic, the Democratic Republic of this, and Democratic Republic of that. North Korea calls itself a republic, and so on and so forth. Anything can call itself a republic. Just like my, you know, if I put a chicken suit on my dog, I can call it a chicken. Doesn't make it a chicken. It's still a dog. Those countries that call themselves republics are not really true republics. They're just putting a little lipstick on, throwing a dress on, claiming that they're something else. Not that we would know anything about that in our society. But a federal republic, what our system was designed to be, is A, not a democracy, not a rule of the cities. The rural areas were also given an ability to have a voice. That's the reason why our Senate is 2 per state, so that no state in the Senate can rule over any other state. Population doesn't matter. That way the smaller states outnumber the bigger states. So if they have more of a voice. Federalist Paper number 10, Madison said, how you control the factions is you set them against each other. You give them the ability to debate. Debate equals liberty, compromise, rather than just one part of the of society running away and controlling everything. Like you see in a democracy where the cities, the population centers, the majority becomes a mob and throws its weight around, dictating 51%, voting away the rights of the other 49%. We are designed to be a republic, and that's what a republic is. Even in our states even used to have a more republican form of government. In Article 4, Section 4, it says, the United States shall guarantee to every state a republican form of government. The word democracy doesn't appear in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence anywhere. But the word republic does. And states are required to be republics. It says so in the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4. And how the states used to be republics, one of the mechanisms of the many that made them a republic was that the state senates also, like the U.S. Senate, were not voted in directly, democratically. U.S. Senate didn't used to be voted in democratically. 17th Amendment in 1913 changed that. They used to be appointed by each house of the state legislature. One senator for one house, the other senator for the other. And then at the state level, the state senators were voted in, not by the people, but by the county legislatures. Today we call them board of supervisors. In California, for example, you have these board of supervisors that reflect more so population of that region than would the Board of Supervisors somewhere else, or the Democratic vote. And then on top of that, it was one per county. Get back to California. So California has some Senate districts, state Senate districts, where you might have one senator representing eight counties or 12 counties. These are the rural counties. Meanwhile, the county of Los Angeles has 15 Senate districts. So in other words, in the state Senate, the rural counties might get one senator for like eight of them or 12 of them, but one county, LA County, gets 15. That's democracy. But originally, it was one per county appointed by the county legislature. Well, if, using California as an example, if that's the way they did it, one per county, do you think that the state Senate would look a little different? Absolutely. A party, political party that sides more with rural style thinking would dominate that branch, that body. The legislative bodies then would be choosing their U.S. senators, and suddenly California would have one senator of each party rather than dominating a particular party. How many other states would that happen? If we were to go just back to being a republic, while the House of Representatives may battle and often wind up more blue, the U.S. Senate, based on the bodies, the legislative bodies of the states choosing their senators rather than being voted in, and the state senates going back to the old way of one per county and being chosen, suddenly the U.S. Senate would look very different. In fact, according to my calculations, you would have 76 Republican senators, 23 Democrats, and one independent. And those Republicans wouldn't be voted in through democracy, with the cities also having their voice, so the senator thinking they need to become more moderate in order to win. These would be senators representing rural areas, because the state Senate is going to be very rural. And so, I hate to say it this way, but you'd have a higher quality Republican. That is what a republic would be. That is how they safeguarded against one party, one faction controlling everything. And I don't care who you are, right, left, upside down, in between, wearing a dress, whatever, you should understand that it's in the best interest of any society that one voice doesn't control everything. You don't want one voice controlling everything. You do that, you get Nazi Germany, you get the Soviet Union, you get Communist China, you get North Korea, you get Cuba, you get Venezuela. You get the Roman Empire after it ceased to be a republic. You get the Egypt under the pharaohs. You get Greece under Alexander the Great. Great societies, but troubled societies that collapsed because of the tyranny. They collapsed under the tyranny. That's what happens when you allow democracy, mob rule, and ultimately that leads to one party or one ideological rule. But in a republic, a federal republic like we were intended to have here in the United States, the minority voice is a voice. Now, those who say they believe in quote-unquote democracy, Kamarinsky is a dean of Berkeley, wrote a book about it. He calls it the tyranny of the minority. So are you saying the minority shouldn't have a voice? That it has to be one or the other? Either the minority is the tyranny or the majority is the tyranny? How about a federal republic where both voices are going at it and compromises are made? Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what anybody would want? Why would anybody want a single party rule except for maybe the power mongers of that single party? Founding fathers with the United States Constitution created a republic, a limited government, where the mechanisms were created through different means. The House of Representatives voted in democratically. The Senate appointed by the state legislatures, one senator per body, legislative body of that legislature. The president elected by an electoral college. The judges appointed by the president but confirmed by the voice of the states which was appointed by the state legislatures. Treaties that could be negotiated and signed by a president, but he doesn't have all that power. It's no good until the voice of the states through the Senate ratify it. Gosh, it wouldn't be nice if the states made sure the federal government had to ask before they did something. That's what it was. That's the way it was originally intended. We don't have a lot of minutes left, so if you're going to call in, this is your last chance. 888-429-5471. 888-429-5871. I appreciate this audience. I hope you learned something. That's kind of the goal here. I educate on the United States Constitution. I've written a couple of textbooks. I've taught in the past economics, government, U.S. history, and Constitution to middle schoolers and high schoolers in homeschool systems. The public schools want nothing to do with me, and I never seem to be able to break into private schools, although there was one school in Vista that's kind of a private school with a homeschool on paper, kind of. That was the last school I taught at. The whole system here was designed. This is what I teach. This is why I teach to be a republic. This is why I tell my classes in the homeschool. This is what I tell. I used to teach 7 Constitution classes. Well, actually, more over time. I used to teach adult Constitution classes at night, and a couple of them during the day there in Southern California. Now, right now, the only teaching I'm doing is on Tuesday nights. If you want to check it out. Tuesdays, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. It's on a friend of mine's page. So you type in MrConstitution.com, but put a hyphen between the Mr. and the Constitution. So it's MR-Constitution.com. And then find the episodes that say Learn the Constitution. This is my friend's Rumble page. So it's a lot of his other videos. And he and I don't always agree on everything. So if you want to look at the videos I'm doing with him, look for the ones that say Learn the Constitution. And I go through the whole Constitution line by line. I also do a lot of videos of my friend Brady the Warhamster, rumble.com/Warhamster, rumble.com/Warhamster.
There has never been a better time to buy gold and silver. To buy gold and silver direct, call our partners at Cornerstone Asset Metals. You can reach them at 888-747-3309 and make sure to tell them the Power Hour sent you.
In a world full of uncertainties, one thing you can control is your preparedness. Heaven's Harvest is here to help you protect your family when it matters most. Imagine having peace of mind with every meal, knowing it's non-GMO and made right here in the USA. From emergency survival food that lasts up to 25 years to heirloom seeds that ensure your garden thrives, we've got you covered. Why wait for a crisis when you can be ready now? With Heaven's Harvest, you're not just buying supplies, you're investing in your family's future. Secure your peace of mind with Heaven's Harvest. Stay prepared, stay safe. Your family deserves it. Visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 and take the first step towards ultimate preparedness today.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV. A place for answers.